7:05 on the drive. Time for RC Country Hobbies. More than toys for big boys, it's for everyone in the family. 6011 Folsom Boulevard, Sacramento. Nate and Katie with you. Dave on vacation. We got you right up till 9 o'clock. 1 hour in the books. I guess your big story, Katie, is you come to us live on location in, well, not, you're in Golden State.
I am on location.
You're not in Oakland. You're in Golden State.
No,
right?
I am in the Golden State, California, correct?
Yeah.
No, we don't stay in Oakland. We stay in San Francisco. Oh, and I've actually never been to this hotel, you guys. And we got in very late last night. And I was in the elevator with kind of a funny story. I'm in the elevator with Grant, Gary Gerald, and Jerry Reynolds. And this hotel apparently has two wings. And we were completely unaware of this fact. So we all go to the third floor and nobody can find their rooms. And then we find out that there's a separate wing. And we have to go across to the other side of the hotel to the third floor, get there. We find out that you have to take stairs. We all have our luggage. It is a complete mess. And did I mention that I was with Grant Napier at 1:30 in the morning? Can you imagine how that went over with him?
I imagine very abruptly.
He was not a happy camper.
No, probably not. So the Kings will look to make it 5 in a row. We got some highlights for you in just a second, but we got a reset here. Kurt Heelan is going to be joining us an hour and a half from now. Talk all things NBA, the Serge Ibaka trade, maybe some James Dolan, Charles Oakley, and of course, the Kings winning streak, their big win last night against the Lakers. We got four down territory coming up in about 10 minutes, and we got a poll question out there that's kind of hit pretty big, politics aside, and I get it, you know, you can't separate politics, but can you respect a guy's decision not to go and see the president, whether you agree with his political side of things or not? That's kind of taken off a little bit, and we took phone calls at 339-1140. 800-920-1140. And just real quick, we don't need to linger on that anymore because I do want to get to these highlights. But we did have Davis that called in, and he was talking about Berkeley being burned to the ground and whatever it was. I just wanted to point out that I have never had a bad experience in Berkeley. And I only say that, Katie, because the cool thing about Berkeley is that you're never going to be the weirdest person in that town. And there's something very liberating about walking the streets in a place like that. I get it. It can make some people uncomfortable. It's not for everyone. All I know, I feel fine there because I'm not going to be the weirdest dude in the building.
I understand that, Nate. And so that is a phenomenal thing. I like Berkeley. I've been there to cover games and stuff. I don't know. Last time I checked, it's not on fire, correct?
No, I don't think so, but that's fine.
Okay.
That's neither here nor there. I'm just saying, you know, weird little place. So the Kings have won 4 in a row, including this victory last night against the Lakers. And, I mean, you heard the stats from DeMarcus Cousins, but why don't you hear it direct from the mouth of our very own Gary Gerald? He would finish with 40, Katie, to go with 12 boards and 8 assists. Again, all the heavy lifting, a near triple-double with 40 points. What more can you say about this guy? 97-96, your final.
Dude, he went to the free throw line 19 times. He's 19 times.
He's always, I mean, Katie, you know that's a strength of his game, and he hits them, unlike a lot of big men. But that really, on this hot streak especially, you've been seeing him 16 trips to, you know, 16 foul shots, 19 foul shots, things like, what was he, 14 to 16 the other night? Now I can't remember what game it was. I mean, he's getting there.
I can look for you. Yeah, he absolutely is. Yeah. This is something. He was 14 of 16. You're right. Against New Orleans, he was 12 of 19 last night. Missed a couple late, but they, you know, you go back the game before that, 13 attempts. It's just he is a high volume, and I haven't checked in a while, but it's between he and Russell Westbrook that go back and forth for that top spot in terms of leading the team or the league in trips to the line. And last night he gets 19 attempts because Luke Walton made the decision to guard him in single coverage. And he was talking about it prior to the game. And he said, hey, it has a lot to do with us being able to stay out of foul trouble. He says, you have to, you know, check and see how that goes throughout the course of the game. If we can stay out of foul trouble and how effective we are. He felt very confident in how Mozgov and Black had defended DeMarcus in the two previous matchups, which is crazy to me because he absolutely annihilated them those times as well. But the crazy thing to me is that he did not adjust his game plan. He did not change his decision really much at all. And I don't know if you recall, Kings were up by like 13 points late in, you know, in the second half. And you go, the Lakers were able to put a little run together to start the fourth quarter. DeMarcus was on the bench and they tied that game. And
yeah,
he comes in and
scary.
It completely, yeah, but it completely changed the moment that DeMarcus came back in that game and Luke Walton stuck with his game plan for single coverage and DeMarcus just ate them alive.
And it was, I mean, it was a good thing because it wouldn't have been the first time, you know, had they not won this game that Dave Joerger would have taken heat for waiting too long to put DeMarcus Cousins back in. And I think that's what everyone was thinking at that point, because you said they were up 13 and then it just turned into Lou Williams time. It got worse, though. He would go on to tie the game. Lou Williams finished with 29 points, but we talked about that yesterday, Katie. Like, Lou Williams is going to shoot the ball. It might go in. and it did last night, but it didn't go for Nick Young.
Yeah, he's a dangerous player. Yeah, it's crazy. Nick Young, you know, 10 points, not a big deal. He's in the starting lineup. That starting
lineup.
But those
were the two guys that we pointed out yesterday.
Yeah, those are the two. And here's the crazy thing about it. You absolutely know in the end of the game in a situation like that when they're putting together a run, you know that it's going to be Lou Williams. Mm-hmm. And knowing it does not mean anything. It's being able to stop it. And they were running that. Luke Walton made a couple interesting decisions. He did not call a timeout there at the end of the game. He did have timeouts. I think he had two left, maybe 20 second timeouts, decided not to call the timeout, let him go, which a lot of coaches kind of have gone kind of trending that way because you can't set a defense and defending in transition is the most difficult thing. Kings did a really good job in terms of defending that. But down the stretch of that game, they were running Lou Williams off of staggered pin downs. And that is maybe one of the most difficult like actions to defend as a shooter. And Tariq Black was just nailing Darren Collison on those screens, did a great job. But when DeMarcus talked at the end of the game about his defensive errors down the stretch, that is what he was talking about. He was the one that was defending Black and he was sitting back in the key instead of showing up on the screen. And that's how Lou Williams got some open looks. So to me, they understand the mistakes. That's a good thing that during the course of, you know, that all playing out, DeMarcus knows he made a mistake. It's a team kind of defensive concept that they did not execute. It didn't bite them and they were able to execute themselves on the other end.
It's been a long, long process, but they've improved slowly throughout the course of the year and they've now won four in a row. They look to keep it going tonight in their final game before the All-Star break. It's the Warriors down in Oakland. Katie's live in San Francisco. Tip off at 7:30 from Oracle. All the coverage starts with game night at 6 o'clock. All right. So if you want to jump in, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We got a little bit of NFL on the way. The Seahawks find themselves in hot water again, but don't seem to be facing any trouble from the league. We'll tell you all about it when we return on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHTK.
That's the Seattle Seahawks radio network there. Richard Sherman with the interception on Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Seahawks have been issued a warning but will face no other punishment for failing to report that Richard Sherman had an MCL injury for a majority of last season. Are you okay with just the warning or should the NFL have come down harder on this?
They should have done a little bit more. It's obviously not a good thing when I could sit here and say that the NCAA probably would have handled it better, because if you had a college, and let's say in this case, the Seahawks are kind of a big deal. So this would be like, let's say Ohio State or someone gets dinged for repeated violations, whether it's, you know, practice time violations or compliance type of stuff, whatever it might be. At least the NCAA would throw the hammer at Louisiana Tech the next time that their coach texted a guy out of season, right? I mean, they do things backwards, but they would punish somebody for this. The NFL,
I can't believe you're even saying that the NCAA would do a better job.
I'm not saying they would handle it right.
I'm just saying about what's going on in Baylor right now. Are you kidding me? But okay.
Well, but that's my point. Like now, because of what happened with Baylor, you know, some other podunk school, Florida A&M, is going to get busted for something and they'll get the death penalty because the NCAA will have to set a precedent.
Right.
The NFL doesn't even have a clue of how to screw this up correctly. If it was, I don't get it, but it's the NFL, so it doesn't surprise me.
Here's my thing, and a lot of people probably can say, hey, who cares about the injury report? Why does it really matter? Well, it matters because it's not only is it part of the rules, but it's part of the rules for a reason, because this affects how how teams game plan for certain guys. And I'll tell you what, Richard Sherman is one of the best to do it. And there is a reason that no one throws the ball his direction. If you know that he's been struggling with a knee injury all season, don't you think teams might decide to test that a little bit? He is, after all, defending their best player. So it takes away their ability to effectively game plan in a fair manner. So yeah, there is a problem with this. I have a big problem with it, Nate.
Arizona Cardinals Radio Network, Larry Fitzgerald with one of his 6 touchdowns on the season. Kurt Warner told Pro Football Talk that he has 4 teammates he believes belong in the Hall of Fame one day. Larry Fitzgerald was one of them, along with Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, and Anquan Boldin. Do you guys agree?
I absolutely agree. The funny thing is, when you look at it, Larry Fitzgerald is an absolute lock. There's no question about him getting in. But this is my thing. Who votes for these things? I feel like players should be the ones doing it. They're the ones that are out on the field and know. So to hear Kurt Warner talk about a guy like Isaac Bruce, who he's like, he doesn't get the respect that he deserves, even Anquan Boldin, he's like, you have no idea the impact that he had and the lack of respect that he gets despite that. So when you hear Kurt Warner say something about this, you hear a quarterback of his caliber or of any player that has actually touched the field, Nate, don't you listen?
Yeah, all 4 of those guys in my book. I think Larry Fitzgerald, Isaac Bruce are the 2 easiest ones to look at. Let's talk about Anquan Boldin for a second, because that's the guy right there that is right on my list of Frank Gore / Steve Smith all-stars. Mm-hmm. Like, people are always going to talk about the Larry Fitzgeralds and the Calvin Johnsons and the Julio Jones. When people say, hey, man, who are your favorite guys to watch? Those are the dudes that football players say were their favorite dudes to watch. They showed up and busted their asses every single down mm-hmm. of every play, and they kind of did it. Well, Steve Smith, not so much, but Boldin and Gore, they did it relatively silently. They just went out and kicked ass for year after year after year. Torrey Holt, one of the best nicknames in the history of football, and it's so simple. Big Game Torrey Holt. That's it. Tells you all you need to know. Who else has that nickname? Big Game Torrey Holt. You can't beat that. That's Hall of Fame level right there.
CBS Sports released an article revealing 8 likely candidates to receive the franchise tag. Of the 8, 4 were defensive studs. Are we seeing the league starting to trend back towards defense?
Yes, and really, I don't know that that's ever changed in the sense that with all the rule changes and stuff, quarterbacks have been putting up such ridiculous numbers. It's also almost a red herring as to what's truly successful in the league. When you look at guys like Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees and even like Jay Cutler in some seasons that can just put up astronomical numbers, Blake Bortles last year that don't result in any wins. Who are the teams that are right there? The Seahawks have won Super Bowls because of their defense. When the 49ers were good, it was because of their defense. The Patriots winning Super Bowls because they're able to put up 28 whatever unanswered points because of their defense, and having a big interception late in a game against the Seahawks because of their defense. It's all there. That's what's important. And look at the Raiders. What do they need to shore up next year? It's not their offense. It's their defense, Katie.
Yeah, and I agree with you to a certain extent. I don't think it's ever really trended away from defense, but I think this is the reality. The league has become such a passing league instead of where it was for a while, which was kind of a ground and pound run game. And so you need the run game maybe now more than ever, because with these passing games, it's crazy. A team can be on for a minute and a half and then their defense has to come back on because they score so quickly. So you need that run game out there. So therefore, your defensive line is so important. And I think even when you look at that, look at cornerbacks. There's a cornerback on this list right now, Eric Berry. And these guys are so critical to the overall success of the team. I don't know that it's ever trended away. I just think we've gotten so caught up in watching the gaudy offensive numbers that we're not paying that close of attention to the defense and how important it is.
Greg Papa on the call there on the Raiders Radio Network. He's going to be joining us here at 8:05 on the drive. And from that game, which was the Oakland Raiders' go for 2 win in week 1 in New Orleans, to a historic comeback in Super Bowl, this year's NFL season was full of incredible games. Easy question, which was your top one of the season?
Is it me? Okay. You know what? This is so difficult for me. And I know Nate, like Dave likes to always say that I'm so indecisive, but there were so many good ones. One that comes to mind for me is the Mexico City game when Derek Carr and that offense had to absolutely come up with something miraculous to come out with that win. And it was just, it was a situation where those are difficult positions. And I don't remember games that well. If we're talking about it on Monday after the game, yeah, it's tough for me to remember stuff. But when you look at something, and I am a Packers fan, I will say that everybody knows that, but there was that stretch of where they won what, 6 games in a row after losing, like going like 1-6 the previous 6 before that. Over that stretch, there were so many miraculous games by Aaron Rodgers. So I don't know. It's tough for me to pick. And it's not because I'm a woman. Jeez, there was a lot of great ones. That's why.
You're forgetting who's in this chair. I'm not going to sit here and be like, stop being a woman. That's the wrong guy. So I'm going to go this one, top of mind and narrative here. I want to say the Super Bowl, but that game kind of stunk for 3.5 quarters. So yeah. I'm going with the Packers and Cowboys in the divisional round. I don't know that it gets much better than that. It looked like the Cowboys were out of it for a while, but then just huge plays both sides down the stretch and for everything that was at stake. That was the one, man. That one was the one that said, hey, the regular season sucked, but I'm going to keep doing this. So I'm going with the playoff battle, man. Hey, 4 Down Territory brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Visit our 2 Sacramento area locations at 624 Watt Avenue in the Arden Town Center and on Fulton and Marconi in the Town and Country Village. They bake their bread fresh daily and feature fresh-made cold subs and fresh grilled hot subs. Get your subs served Mike's way with onions, lettuce, tomatoes, oil, vinegar, and spices. You need food for an upcoming party while watching your favorite team? Jersey Mike's caters. Choose from a variety of subs, salads, and fresh-made cookies. Greg Papa joining us at 8:05. Kurt Heelan, a pro basketball talk at 8:30. But next, we got an NBA trade deadline. The Kings have won 4 in a row and a whole bunch of stuff going on around the league, including we'll see the way things are shaking down in the East now that there's a big injury in Cleveland. That's all coming up in the final hour and a half of the drive. Sports 1140 KHTK. 7:37 at the KHTK studios. Time for RC Country Hobbies. More than toys for big boys. It's for everyone in the family. 6011 Folsom Boulevard, Sacramento. Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen with you. Katie in Oakland ahead of the Kings and Warriors tonight. She'll be off the next couple days. Dave's on vacation already. She's going to enjoy the All-Star break. I'll be joined by Brian May. You know him. You've seen him on TV. And real quick, before we get to some of this NBA stuff, I want to let you know what we have in store for the rest of the show. Greg Papa is going to join us at 8:05, and we'll be able to hit all of the Bay Area kind of sporting scene there, whether it's the Kings and Warriors coming up tonight, that Warriors team coming off a loss to the Nuggets, but also, you know, we'll make sure that we get to Raiders, 49ers, I mean, you name it. Greg Papa can do everything. And we want to make sure we reset the poll question, too. If you head on over to twitter.com, find my account at the Nate Goodyear or Katie at Katie_C, you'll see today's poll question. Real simple one. Can you respect a guy's decision to not meet the president, politics aside? And I mean, I think for the most part, you know, when people have responded to this, Katie, the big thing has been, hey, you can't take politics out of it. And man, that's fine. Like, I get it. We get it. We're not that dumb, but I'm just asking you to for a second, just tell us if you can just tell us if you can respect the guy's decision. You know, same with the Colin Kaepernick deal. You don't have to, you know, agree with this. This isn't about the politics of what they're standing, kneeling, going to see the president or not for. It's not about that. It's about whether you respect their right to do that. And as it is right now, 81% say, hey, man, that's your choice. Go for it if you so choose.
You know, and I think we mentioned it earlier. So those that are joining us for the first time this morning, we talked about the fact that, hey, it's not a new thing for players to skip the White House. It is kind of a new thing that people are making a big deal of it. And that just speaks right now to the political climate. We have to point out that the ones that are missing it, some of them are saying it is because of Trump being the president, and they don't feel welcome there, and they don't feel like they're being represented well. And then there are people that are saying that it's completely unrelated to politics. But in saying that, the people in the past that have missed it, they may not have voted for Obama or whatever president that was there, but the reason that they did not go was not a political reason. It wasn't because they hadn't supported the candidacy. That just speaks right now to kind of how intense things are. And I'm glad that people, it's interesting to see, it was a good poll question, good job by you. I'm glad to see that people are like, hey, I don't care what you, who you support or what, like, you have a choice, period. And just because you choose not to go doesn't mean that you're some kind of wackadoo, you know?
Yeah.
It's take okay.
Take your phone calls on that at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. But we do have plenty of NBA to get to as well. The phone lines are open. There was a trade yesterday. We talked about the Serge Ibaka going to the Raptors. And then the other news, of course, was Kevin Love is going to be out for 6 weeks. He's having a procedure on his knee. Now, the Cavs came out and won last night, Katie. But it kind of raises some questions now because Serge Ibaka is off the market. That, to me, and we'll ask Kurt Heelan about this, but that pretty much says he was probably the prize power forward available, so to speak, if you were looking for a four. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that just because of the Kevin Love injury, I don't think that had it happened like a week or two earlier that the Cavs would have targeted a power forward to replace him.
No.
Yeah, so I don't know how that affects them. I don't know if that's what you were trying to say.
No, where I'm going is with the Celtics now being in the number two spot, they're within striking distance. Let's see, last check of the standings. They're 2.5 games back of the Cavs because the Cavs won last night. The Celtics were idle. But tonight, here's the deal. They're taking on the current NBA championship belt holder, Katie. It's a title match between the Celtics and the 76ers. So now that you see.
And you're saying the belt holder because they're the ones that stopped that 13-game Miami Heat streak that was going on.
Exactly. So they've been holding it for a couple of games now. Now it's Isaiah Thomas and the Celtics' chance to get at it. So now that Kevin Love has been dealing with some stuff, the Cavaliers seem vulnerable whether he's healthy or not. Do the Celtics, is it time for them to kind of go all in? Do they need to use some of their assets and get someone? There's blood in the water in the East, Katie. And do they have a chance to make the right move?
Ooh, yes, they absolutely do. And they've done such a tremendous job of just making sure that they're in a good place in terms of draft picks and money and all of that. You look at Cleveland, and I would even argue to say this, even though you said it yesterday, any team with LeBron James on it, you can't count them out, right? However, for the first time ever, where I agree with that statement, I'm a little concerned about Cleveland for multiple reasons. We saw how they played when the Kings beat them on the road in Cleveland. They finished the month of January a game below 500, which is just, it's shocking when you think of a team that not only has LeBron on it, but are the defending NBA champs. They have the highest payroll in the league. They have an amazing roster. However, there are some problems there. And you look at the constant complaining and, you know, just the trolling that LeBron James is doing to his front office and ownership because he is not pleased with the roster and how it's made up right now. So not only do they want to make a move, but from a mental standpoint or a team standpoint, if I'm Boston, I'm looking at that right now saying, you know what? They're vulnerable, and they're vulnerable for multiple reasons. And I don't know what the move would be if I'm Boston, but I mean, can you think of what they really need? Because they're missing Avery Bradley still, which is a huge piece to their puzzle. They had some issues earlier in the season where they fought through some injury stuff, but they were still able to finish that stretch a game above 500. And that was without Jay Crowder. That was without multiple guys that were key guys in the lineup. So I think Boston is that sneaky, you need to be worried about them. And one move could be the difference for them, but I can't put my finger on exactly, okay, what is it? You can't give out the defense. You can't give up a guy like Jay Crowder. I know that for sure.
Right. They're so, what's the word I'm looking for? They're such a kind of a machine in terms of like team effort and stuff like that. You feel like a move could easily shake up chemistry with them more than necessary. And you're always, because of the assets they have, you're always going to kind of, well, and because it's in Boston, you're always going to hear people talking the connection with DeMarcus Cousins. And even, you know, if you want to play that out, I don't see how they make that move either, considering the investment they just made in Al Horford. I don't know that you put those two guys together. Listen, it would make you more talented on paper, but I don't know that that's a fit. And you don't want to admit that maybe Al Horford didn't work out right away. So that's just kind of a weird one too. But another team that we're kind of forgetting here. And
well,
been
hold on, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. We're talking about Boston. And before we move on, which it sounds to me like is where you're going, I want to, you know, if you just look right now, and this is the thing about trade rumors, you just really honestly don't quite know where these rumors are coming from, where the sources are.
Nonsense.
Exactly. And I feel like it can be someone on their little trade machine thing on their computer being like, oh, let's plug this guy in or whatever. But two names that are linked to the Celtics right now in terms of trade rumors are guys like Jimmy Butler and Paul George. I don't know about Paul George. Jimmy Butler, that whole situation in Chicago and everything that's played out, he's actually a guy that would fit extremely well into the Celtics system. Not only is he a tremendous offensive player, but he's a very, very good defensive player. And that's kind of the identity of that Celtics team. But that's something to watch for. I think a move, if they make a move, Nate, it has to be something big, the caliber of a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George, because those are absolute game changers.
Yeah, if they acquired either of those guys, I would almost want to make them the favorite in the East.
Right.
Just that to me is what's missing with them. I love Jay Crowder, but what they really need is a guy that's a bigger offensive threat too.
Yeah,
I said this
both.
You know, when Steph Curry got big, but the list of teams that have won an NBA title with their best player not being a physically dominant player,
right,
it's not very long. And in fact, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times you would have to go back to those Pistons teams with Chauncey Billups to even find a team whose best player was their point guard that won a title. And even then, yeah, Chauncey was doing it with physicality. So Steph was kind of the exception to decades and decades of the rule in the NBA. I don't know that Isaiah Thomas is quite transcendent enough to be that guy.
No, I agree with you. I think that when you look at them, they rely so heavily on Isaiah and what he does to be able to be successful. And so far, he's been able to come through for them. Uh-huh. The big question from a lot of critics has been, is he going to be able to sustain the production that he has had through the first two-thirds of the season, not only to finish out the season, but into the playoffs? And we all know, once you get into the playoffs, defense change. It becomes a much more physical game, which will affect a guy like Isaiah, not because of his size, but because he is a perimeter player.
Yeah.
They need, and if they do make a move, and I love Jay Crowder and I would never give him up. However, the only way you do is if you get a player that can defend at near the same rate, but also has the offensive component. They cannot make a lateral move. They have to make a splash if they're going to make a move at all. And that is a player the caliber of Jimmy Butler or Paul George. So we'll see.
Well, let me, I mean, you know, so often, this is what I've noticed anyway, NBA playoff series, when you're going seven games deep or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. it so often just comes down to who has the better stars, because you're going to get close mm-hmm. games. You're going to have to trade buckets. And if you want to just look at it in a total binary sense, you know, you going to take LeBron James or Isaiah Thomas? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, really, like, all,
no, I know what you're
things,
saying.
All things being equal, it's probably going to come down to not that matchup, because those two aren't going to be, you know, guarding each other. But you get my point there. Those are the dudes that are going to have to swap buckets at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm taking LeBron
and,
still.
I'm sorry. There's like I get what you're saying. There's a level to this where I'm like, I don't know. Isaiah has been the best player in the
right.
NBA this season
exactly.
in the fourth quarter.
Prove me wrong. Every time we say it,
yes.
he does.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at it, and it's not like LeBron James hasn't needed to be that guy uh-huh. for Cleveland. They're not having the season anyone expected them. There's a lot of just stuff going on there, and it's murky. And we can talk about this at nauseam, but really it comes down to they're still missing J.R. Smith. Kevin Love is out now. We saw last year how one injury can affect the outcome of a season for a team. And I'm talking specifically about the Golden State Warriors. And that, not only did they not have Steph for a large part of the did for the finals, because you want a player, especially a shooter like Steph Curry, to be playing, because it's about flow. It's about momentum when you're in that position. But when you look at that game that Andrew Bogut went down and that suspension from Draymond Green, that is the moment that changed that series for Golden State. So as much as you say, yeah, you know, LeBron is great and I'll take him, you know, 9 times out of 10 in any situation, if you have him on the team, who else is there? that makes a big difference. If he has a full roster and him, yeah, probably take them. But I think that Boston, man, they should be really confident about where they are right now.
Be feeling good. And we'll talk with Kurt Heelan of ProBasketballTalk.com at 8:30. He'll have more on all the madness in the East, because you've also got the Wizards right now, who are white hot and are a team that if John Wall decides that he wants to play defense on Isaiah Thomas, I think that could be a pretty tough matchup for him. So Kurt Heelan will take us all through that. Plus, you know, there's a Western Conference too, and we can chat there. Plus, Greg Papa is going to look ahead to the Kings and Warriors, among so many other things. That's coming up about 15 minutes from now. But as we mentioned, Kings are playing the Warriors tonight. They've won 4 games in a row. And as we open up the phone lines now, I want to see, you know, how do you take on the Warriors tonight? It looks like Casey might have a plan for us. What's up, Casey? You're on with Nate and Katie.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey.
Pretty good. So my question is, obviously, the Kings, they've got something going right now. They've got 4 in a row, 5 out of 6. And the chances of us winning at Golden State tonight after they got blown out against Denver, I would say our chances are very, very slim. So in order to keep us from, you know, going in on a bad note, what would you guys consider, you know, giving the starters a little bit of a rest tonight and maybe play some of the young guys and not let us go down there and get blown out and go in on a bad
note?
No. I mean, can they even, no. Thanks for the call, Casey. Can they even afford to do that? I mean, they just don't have bodies right now.
No, they don't. They don't have bodies. They have a ton of injuries. Last night they played, you know, 4 guys off the bench, a shorter bench, obviously. Scowl did not play and Papianis did not play, which is not surprising. And then, of course, Ty Lawson was out. So they had 9 guys in the rotation. My concern is that you look at the starting unit last night, which is right now made up of a bunch of guys who were in the second unit previously. You know, they scored 80 of the Kings' 97 points. That is how shorthanded this team is right now. And those guys, I mean, Aaron Aflalo played over 37 minutes. DeMarcus played 37 minutes. You know, Ben played 34. Darren, 40 minutes. And this is the second night of a back-to-back. You're playing against a team that pace-wise really likes to push the pace. I don't think that the Kings can afford to say, hey, we're resting people. You're about to go into the All-Star break. Guys are going to get a rest. What you want is you want this team to continue to build confidence. And if you say to them, we're going to rest these guys because we don't want to get blown out because the odds are stacked against us, what kind of a message is that sending to your team?
Yeah, I mean,
seriously.
Right. I mean, logistically, it doesn't make any sense either. They're just not in a spot from any perspective, like in the standings or from an attrition standpoint where they can pull that off. And, you know, listen, their bench numbers have.
Wasn't Cleveland on the road the second night of a back-to-back as well?
I can't remember.
No, it wasn't. It was the first game. It was the first game because I remember being in Cleveland the night before. Point being, though, no one expected that to happen. You can't go into games expecting to lose. You can't.
You just do what you can. Let's see what Mike.
You can't game plan for a loss.
Mike, talk over Katie.
Yeah. Hey,
good. Good, man.
Hey there.
So here's my thing. I love, I mean, it's nice to see them able to play well, but realistically, we're in the worst possible position right now. If I'm not mistaken, we are out of the 8th seed, so we're not in the playoffs, and we are lower than the 10th seed in the spot. So we are currently not in the playoffs. Like, if the season ended today, we didn't make the playoffs, and we lost our draft pick. So I think that the management needs to be very careful kind of about what we're doing here. And I think, you know, in
– careful in terms of what? Are you talking about how they approach this game or the trade deadline?
No. This isn't just tonight's game. I'm talking season now.
Okay.
Right. So if currently this would be the worst case scenario, we didn't make playoffs and we lost our first round pick. So
right.
And I just don't think, honestly, we're going to have what it takes to get to the 8th seed. Especially, I think Denver's made some decent moves to help them be that team. But at the same time, I just don't feel like Vlade and Vivek, it's kind of something I feel in my gut, they're going to do that. Because right now, with how well some of our assets are playing, not that we have a ton of them, but right now, going into the All-Star break would be, I think, a good time to really start looking at trading some of these guys. And I know you talked about Cousins to Boston. He's been mentioned to Phoenix, although that was probably just, you know, complete
BS. That's not happening.
Right. So, well, and I think that's unfortunate that that's something that we're not even going to listen to. But then there are some definitely some decent moves that could be made. Like Costa, I think, is a very tradable asset.
Yeah, he is.
And then even Ty Lawson to a team like Cleveland, who really wants that backup guard, at his salary could actually fit for them for maybe, I don't know, a European piece or a second round or something like that. But I think we should.
But I have a question for you there. Would the Kings want to give up Ty Lawson? Like, what for? What does that benefit them?
We don't have him under contract, right?
Yeah.
So he's gone. So we can obviously try and get something.
See,
for
I spoke
him.
With Vlade about that specifically not very long ago, and he feels very confident. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of teams didn't want to give Ty Lawson an opportunity, and there is this level of, well, hey, we gave him the opportunity and he has expressed how grateful he is for that and he fits in well in this system. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he would be gone next season. I don't know that this is a Rajon Rondo situation.
Mike, thanks for the call. Greg Papa joins us next on The Drive. This is Sports 1140 KHTK.